From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Atlanta, San Francisco, Boston. These are just a few metropolitan cities seeing a rise in white families moving back into urban areas. When whites move in, are blacks inevitably priced out of the neighborhood? Here to talk about the pros and cons of gentrification is economist Keith Reed. He is a business reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, and he blogs for BET's finance page, Dollar Out of 15 Cents. Hey, Keith.
Hey, what's going on?
Nice to have you. Listen, we are seeing a reversal of white flight with whites returning to the city. Why is this happening?
In a lot of cases, it's because of what happened with the housing boom. In a lot of cases, it's because of what's happening with demographic trends. You've got the confluence of two things that have happened over probably the last, say, 5 to 10 years. The first would have been the housing boom. You saw an incredible run-up in prices on many homes. It afforded many people the opportunity to either get out of homes or cash in on homes that they had equity in the city. And it also allowed many people who lived in the suburbs to move back into cities by selling the big houses that they owned out in the burbs and being able to afford maybe that more expensive downtown condo or condo in a more desirable city neighborhood. The second thing is what's happening is that we are at the beginning of an unprecedented transfer of wealth in this country. The baby boom generation is retiring. Their kids are off to college or are out of college. They are empty nesters. They don't want to live. They don't need to live anymore 30 minutes, 40 minutes outside of the city center for the purposes of schools and those sorts of things. They want to live downtown. They want to live in a neighborhood. They want to be able to walk. They don't want to drive as much anymore. And so those two things have conspired to move many families who had moved, who were largely white, but not entirely white, who had moved out of the city, who could afford to not be there anymore, to move back in.
Now, you've mentioned the why. Let's talk about the where. Where in America is this happening?
It's really happening all over America. You mentioned some of the cities. I lived in Boston for the last, before I moved here to Cincinnati, I lived in Boston for about 5 years. And you saw that in some of the neighborhoods like Roxbury. You literally saw some parts of Roxbury, which had been traditionally a black neighborhood in Boston and still is, but it became much more racially and economically mixed in the last several years. You saw that happen in, of course, Harlem in New York. You saw it happen even in some places like the Hill District in Pittsburgh, which is actually where I grew up. That began, some parts of that are closer to downtown Pittsburgh changed. In California, in some of the hotter real estate markets, San Francisco, even Oakland, especially Oakland, with people spilling across the Bay Bridge from San Francisco and being priced out, moving into Oakland, which had a much higher proportion of lower income African Americans, housing prices exploded in Oakland. So it's East Coast, West Coast, and even in the middle of the country.
You know, there's a perception, Keith, that when an area is revitalized, that the lower income people are in fact pushed out. But is that in fact true?
That's true in some cases, but it really happens in a much more, I don't want to say natural, but it happens in a much more organic way in many cases. What will happen is what I described earlier. In some instances, you do have a landlord that simply looks out over the terrain and says, you know, I can get a lot more money for this building if I sell it as condos than I can if I rent it to the people who are living here. The more likely thing to happen is property values will rise. Some early, quote-unquote, pioneers of neighborhoods will come in and snatch up property either because they wanted to move to live in the city or they like the neighborhood. That'll force up, that'll increase prices or increase rents because other landlords will look around and they'll have a tenant just move out on their own. That tenant will move and the landlord will say, okay, now this unit will be a condo or this unit will have a rent that's $1,700 instead of $1,100 or $1,100 instead of $650. So now the person who used to occupy that unit, who was low income or who was African American or who was, whatever the characteristic may have been, an identical person cannot come in and afford to then fill that housing unit. And this happens en masse when you have the right economic conditions, which is what we saw, especially, again, during the housing boom.
What are the roles that government plays, particularly local governments, cities, municipalities, counties, in luring suburbanites back to the center of town?
They do play some role. I mean, what you see in many cases is obviously no government is immune, and no government ignores the opportunity to get a person with a higher income and maybe a higher net worth to live in their city, because then that means that they are able to reap some of the tax benefits, both in terms of property taxes and income taxes, and in terms of some sales tax, especially if they have a local sales tax in place. Just economically, the more desirable person to a city that's been hurting for money is going to be somebody who spends more money, who owns a house that costs more, and who makes more money and puts more money in city coffers. But cities do, because many of them get money from federal housing programs, from HUD and from through other government incentives. Those tend to come with a responsibility on the part of the city or the part of any municipality to ensure that there are opportunities for equal housing, both for lower income people. So you'll see them put in place, if a developer comes in and says, we want to build X number of units. Well, out of X number of units, Y number of units need to be quote unquote affordable, whatever the standard may be in that particular community.
Now, how much of a factor, if at all, is age and the age of the people who are moving in, and how does that affect the neighborhood? You mentioned at the very beginning of our conversation about people moving back after their kids are gone and they don't want to drive and they want to walk and et cetera. But oftentimes we see young people moving into the central core as well, don't we?
Yeah, you do see young people moving into the central core. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about the recent quote unquote gentrification phenomenon is that in many of these neighborhoods, you are seeing a generation of African Americans and to a large extent a generation of Latinos who previously would not have generally drawn the types of incomes, been in the types of professions that they're in, and are able to move in and to afford things. And that creates something of a class rift, not just a race rift in some of these gentrifying neighborhoods. I remember being in Boston in the Dorchester neighborhoods, some sections of which were always heavily white, other sections of which were always staunchly black, and hearing some of the people complain about, this neighborhood used to, the new people who are moving in aren't like us. Well, the new people who were moving in was me. I was a 20 something single black male who made above the median income in that particular part of town. I wasn't the local. I wasn't the townie. I wasn't the guy who had spent his whole life, working a blue collar job in that part of Boston. But I wanted to move to a section of Boston that quite honestly had a diverse population and had a lot of people that lived like me. And Dorchester was it. The problem was, I didn't understand the social and economic ramifications of the people who had lived there before me not being able to afford it now, whereas I could.
You know, that's an interesting point you mentioned about being in a diverse neighborhood, and gentrification sort of begins the process of creating a diverse community. But if the changes continue and one group moves in and one group moves out, it goes back to being resegregated, doesn't it?
Gentrification can be the beginnings of a diverse community, but only to the extent that you have housing at the various points that afford people the ability to be able to move in. Some developers are starting to understand that and take that into consideration in terms of the long-term economic future of a development. And some cities are starting to take that into consideration, that you can't have just one price point, that you need to be able to offer housing options in neighborhoods that fit multiple income and that fit multiple income profiles. There are some interesting experiments going on, again, in some of these, especially in some of the cities where the housing market boomed the greatest. In Boston, I saw some interesting things going on. In New York, there have always been experiments with that. Some of them worked, some of them don't. But again, the ability to be able to create a healthy neighborhood that is both economically stable and ethnically diverse or diverse otherwise, is going to depend on the number of housing options that are available.
Final thing is this. Gentrification is generally, I think, associated with whites coming into an area that is either black or brown, and that whites of a higher economic class are coming into an area of a lower economic class. If you agree with that general description, it seems that perhaps it's inaccurate in terms of the people coming into the city are those who have money necessarily, as opposed to just being white. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the first step in any gentrification in its purest form is always going to be economic. People, the idea that people are forced to move isn't that they're forced to move just because they're black. It's because they're forced to move because they're black and they can't afford to live there. If you own a house in a particular neighborhood and you've been there for a long time and you can afford to hold on to that house unless your taxes go up dramatically, which does happen in some cases. But unless that happens, you don't have to go anywhere. The problem is that in many neighborhoods, the African-Americans who lived there for a long time were not owners. They were renters. And that's an economic problem, so that when rents go up, they can't afford to stay there. And the person who traditionally has come behind them has generally been a white person that can afford to move in. That's changing somewhat because a black person can, you know, in many instances can now afford to come in. But it's still a displacement on the basis of both race and economic status.
Keith, thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Keith Reed is a News and Notes economics contributor and a business reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. He joined us from member station WVXU in Cincinnati, Ohio.